Accession number 31510, reel 5.
He was about 10, I suppose.
What was your opinion of the officers and the captain aboard?
The officers? These officers were very good. Well, let's put it like this. We were all in the same boat, weren't we? So, there was a sort of family closeness, far more than there was in the RAF. When I got back to the RAF, I hardly ever spoke to a pilot. No, it was separate completely, but here it was all together. Yeah, it was a very close community. See, there weren't very many of us, 60 at the outside. That's the whole squadron there. The CO, this was 1939, the CO there, Lieutenant Torrey. They called him Tiny. Yeah, Finch Noyce, he was killed in Norway. My pilot was here, Rupert, he was killed in the Med. Flight Sergeant in charge. Sergeant Bullmain is there somewhere, just down here. Yeah. A very close-knit community we were.
How would the death of a pilot affect the morale of the squadron then?
It didn't. No, it didn't. No. In those days you just say he's dead. You know. Yeah. No, it's now that...
How long had you been operating off Norway for?
Oh, I don't know. We were in Orkney. May, April? Yeah, it must have been April. Because we went to Orkney in February, end of February, 1940. Yes. And they did the Bergen raid from there, where they sank the German cruiser. Oh. I'll think about it in a minute. Yeah, there was a German cruiser in Bergen. And 803 Squadron and 800 Squadron got together. Yeah, that's the one I volunteered for, and they wouldn't let us go. Can't remember that name. Anyway, they flew across from Hatsten to Bergen and did the raid and flew back again. And one of them landed on the road and stopped, didn't have any petrol. They reached the limit of their endurance. Yeah. We waited there for one to come back, and the fitters were saying, no, he won't come back now. He's run out of his time. But he did come back.
These were skewers still.
Skewers. Oh, yes. Yes, skewers. Yes. They were good aircraft, but they say they were underpowered. Of course, I didn't know that because it wasn't my job. But for as far as I was concerned, they were all right.
What were conditions like?
Yeah.
Off Norway at that time of year.
At that time of the year, we varied, you see, our position. Sometimes we were way up by Narvik, where it was cold. Yes, we used to wear long pants, long woolly pants, and flight deck overalls, extra thick. It was cold. We had to, of course, we come from the South Atlantic, hadn't we, you see? We had to change the oil on the guns to antifreeze, because the oil froze. When we were down further, it was cold, but not that cold, no. No, but it never got dark, you see, that was the trouble. The enemy aircraft could see us all the time. And there used to be a spotter plane on the horizon pretty well. When our fighters, our skewers, fighters, yeah. They did very well though, skewers. When they took off, you see the spotter plane to move away, that's all. So they knew where we were all the time. I don't know how many times the air raid came. It was almost continuous at one time. I think about 12 hours was almost continuous. You couldn't put your foot down on the gun decks anyway, because of the empty cartridge, empty shells, you know. No. They didn't get time to clear the deck. Same in Mediterranean. Yeah. No. And of course, we had to make up our own ammunition belts in those days. I think the RAF had Browning belts already made up. Well, we didn't. We had to make our own. So we used to sit out on the deck off Norway with boxes of cartridges and clips and make up belts. See, a squadron rearm would be 21,600 rounds, something like that, which is a lot of things to make up with your fingers, isn't it? So everybody used to have a go at that. But our fingers used to get us sore. No good trying to wear gloves doing that job. No. No, it was a manual job. Yeah. Yeah. Used to carry a 100-pound bomb up a steep steps and through a hole in the bulkhead, you know. Couldn't do it now. But didn't think anything of it. No. You got used to it. Up in the desert, I had a chap who could carry a 250. He's a big chap, mind you, was. Yeah. Yeah. Usually used to take two of us and lift the 250, and one used to get underneath and push it up on his back, you see. That's him. What was it, young? The big young, eh? Yeah. This, where is he? Here he is, Taylor. He was the adjutant. And down in the South Atlantic, he called me into the office, squadron office. Oh, Stevens. How old are you, Stevens? 18, sir. You're drawing your tot. I said, yes, sir. You're not allowed to draw your tot until you're 20, he said. He said, you'll probably end up in the rattle. You know what the rattle is? It's where the chains are, in the cells. Oh. So I said, well, sir, I'm RAF, you know, and I didn't join the boy service, I joined men's service. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm a man, you know, I'm drawing. No, he said, you're not allowed to draw till 20. He said, I'll do what I can for you. So I said, thank you very much, sir. and they charged me £3 something or other, which was a lot of money. Yeah, £3 something. And of course I couldn't draw my chart any longer. But it was nice, I used to like that. Pot of rum. It wasn't pure rum, of course, it was watered. That's, no, it was alright. Yeah, Taylor.
Did you go through any of the other naval traditions, like crossing the line?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, crossing the line. Yeah, we had a... On the Ark, we had a rope at the bow end. And as we crossed the line, two people carried the rope from the bow end to the stern end. So it was crossing the line. And there was a little bit of a ceremony. But on the troop ship, when I went out on the troop ship, there was a bigger ceremony. They made a pool and had the chair and Neptune all dressed up and all the rest of it, you know. And funny thing, the captain had never crossed the line, so they put him in first. Soot and all sorts in the water, and flour. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but I've got in the other room, I've got the crossing the line certificate somewhere. Oh, there's the ship. No, it's Orkney, that is. Must be after that then. Oh, there it is. There's a crossing the line certificate from Mark Royal. Actually, it's a bigger one. I've got it framed in the other room. There it is. Nobody can hurt me in the sea, look. According to that, signed by Neptune.
How much information were you given about what was going on?
Nothing. No. No. You know, I mentioned the pilot who should have written it all down. Well, he knew what he had to do, because he's told me afterwards, or we had to go and bomb a bridge, a railway tunnel, which was between Norway and Sweden. And he said, I didn't like that, although they used to bomb the railway tunnels at Worthydown before the war. I know, because I was in the back, and my uncle was working on the railway. You know, and I used to hang a coloured scarf over the side, so to let him know where I was. But, I got what I was saying now.
You talk about not being told.
Yes. He knew what he had to do, but we didn't. All we were told, put on 250-pound armour-piercing bombs or ordinary GP bombs. Not we did, but we didn't use those. But either armour-piercing or semi-armour-piercing. 250 pounds, sometimes it was a 500. We didn't know where they were going. All we did is we were told. Put such and such bombs on. And that was it. Yeah. And they never told us what they were going to do either. No.
Did you find that frustrating at all?
Not really. No. We used to see them go. See him come back. That was that. Yeah. I know. Where is he? Jack Hadley. Oh, that's Rio. Look, that's the ship in Rio. You see how close the people are. Look. Yeah. Yeah. And we're up on the flight deck looking, craving to go ashore. What was I looking for? No. 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 I forget what I was looking for now. That's real. Must be this end. Yeah, there it is. Pardon. What was I looking for?
Jack Hadley, you mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Jack Hadley. Monk. There's Monk. Yeah, there he is. On the end. Jack Hadley. Off Norway. He went on. I don't know what he was doing, but he met up with some German aircraft, and when he came, when he landed on, there's a bullet that comes through the cockpit from that side, took away the top of his lip, the other side. Yeah. he survived the war, but he grew a moustache. Yeah. Yeah, I saw him get out of the cockpit. In the hangar, of course. Yeah.
How did you feel about having to leave the Ark World eventually?
I didn't mind. No, I didn't mind. I was missing the RAF, see? I think I put on that form you sent me. If you're off Norway or in the South Atlantic or in the Mediterranean, it's no good saying, I'd like to go on a cannon course. Because they laugh at you, won't they? Or I'd like to go on a turret course. Or when the rockets came in, I'd like to go on a rocket course. They would, they'd laugh at you. Oh, you're just trying to get out of it, you see? No. So when I got back to the RAF, I didn't know these things. You know, I'd been shot up in the desert. I knew what cannons were like. But to actually handle a cannon, that, no, I had no idea. Or turrets. We had a couple of rocks on the ship. That was a skewer with a bolt and pull turret in the rear cockpit. We had two of those, and I've looked in those turrets, but I knew how to operate them, but I didn't know the maintenance of them. And they were ranged a couple of times when a raid was coming in. The tunnel used to go range rocks, and we knew that something was going to happen. But whether they were in action, actually in action or not, I don't know. No. But some of the stories you read about the Ark, they say that the rocks weren't used. Well, they were. They were ranged. Because I said to one of the air gunners, a tag, what do you do? He said, I stream myself behind that little bit of armour plating. There's a little bit of armour plating in front. Yeah. No, they were later used as a target towing. And towing a drogue target, you know. Yeah. No. My brother was on what aircraft were they called? Had a turret in the back. Bolt and pull turret. Can't remember what they're called anyway. He was on a squadron of those and used to fly in the turret. And it got stuck one day and he was upside down in the turret and he couldn't right, you know. So they told him afterwards that there was a manual control he didn't know about. So, yeah, no, I didn't know anything about them. No. And all these big bombs, you see, that the RAF developed, I didn't know a thing about them. The largest bombs we ever used were 500. Even up the desert. There's 250 pounders up there, no? No. No, it was way out of touch. Way out of touch. Still, never mind.
How long were you aboard Ark Royal 4?
From 1939, before the war, except for the time when we were put ashore at Orkney, until November 40, when the ship came back from the Mediterranean. We went to Birkenhead, went in the dry dock. Yeah.
What happened next?
What happened next? I went to Leon Solent near Portsmouth. I forget the name of the ship. What's it called? No, I don't know. Anyway, Leon Solent, which was a pool for drafting. And while I was there, I thought I might as well do something useful. So I applied. There was an airfield at Eastleigh, which I'd known from a boy. I put in to see if I could get a posting to Eastleigh. And they said yes. So they posted me to Eastleigh, which was a place we were putting a gun into former aircraft. Nice little job. And of course my grandfather was still alive, so I applied for shore leave to live with him, and they granted it. Fine. And I'd already met my wife then. By then, that's when we came back from the South Atlantic. Came back in February 1940, and my stepfather was the headmaster of this village school. And my wife, he said, I've got a new infant teacher down there. Anyway, that's how it started. And I lived it with my grandfather. Came home when I could, this end. And that was Christmas 1940. Oh, yeah, Christmas 1940. I got engaged. On February, I was on a bloomin' troop ship off to Egypt. And I didn't come home till the middle of 1943. Funny story there. Yes, yeah, somebody in Egypt said, if you go home before me, go to Exeter and see my wife, will you? Let her know what's going on and how I am and all this. I said, of course I will. So, came home, met my fiance again. We were strangers, weren't we? So, after a week or so, I said to my mother, I'm going down to Exeter to see my friend's wife. I'll take one with me. She said, you won't. You see, we weren't married. You won't, you said. Her father wouldn't like that. Oh, dear. And there was no thought of sharing a room or anything like that. Oh, no, but you can't do that. No, her father wouldn't like that. So we thought, well, what can we do? Oh, no, we get married. That's what happened. Yeah. So we had a honeymoon in Exeter. Saw all the blokes. Why? Yeah. Yeah. Very good, too, it was. Yeah. After the war, he became a vicar. And I read many years later in the paper, national paper, the vicar of so-and-so had run off with one of his choir girls. So there we are. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him at all. No. Yeah.
What were your first impressions of Egypt when you got there?
Hot. Hot. Yeah. Yes, it was cold going up through the Suez Canal. We approached from the Red Sea end, you see. It was hot in the Red Sea. Court was hot. Sit on the mess deck benches and drink your tea, and it would run out of your perspiration, make a puddle on the floor. It was that hot. But going up through the Suez Canal, it was chilly. Anyway, we went up through past Ismailia up to Port Said, and I thought we were going to sail on along the Mediterranean to Alexandria, but no, we disembarked at 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Yeah, I remember I dropped my kit bag down the side and it burst, so I had to patch that up in a hurry. Anyway, we got on the train and travelled from Port Said through the delta to outside Alexandria. Yeah. Wooden seats. You could climb up onto the top of the carriage if you wanted to. There were Egyptian Camel Corps people racing by the side of the train sometimes. Oh, dear. Anyway, we got to I can't call it a station, it was just a stop. Because there was no platform or anything like that. We got out of the carriage into the sand. There were some lorries there. And the lorries took us through Alexandria to Dekela, which was HMS Grebe, which was out the other side of Alexandria, just near the desert. And when I got there, I was supposed to go to a place called Fayed, which was down past, by the side of the Suez Canal, well, out in the desert from the Suez Canal, down below Ismailia, between Ismailia and Suez. It was a miserable place, so I went down there once. Anyway, I reported to the armory, and there was a flight sergeant in charge. And I said who I was, and I said, I'm supposed to go to Fayed, right? Well, he said, forget Fayed, he said. How would you like to go into Alexandria Dockyard and sort out the illustrious armament stuff, aircraft armament stuff? Because the illustrious had been bombed at Taranto, yeah? So I said, yes, I wouldn't mind. All right, so you go on and then report to the Naval Armament Supply Officer.